It's Tuesday, February 5th, 2013. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. The worst nightmare for any parent has come to a happy conclusion in Midland City, Alabama, with the death of the kidnapper and the rescue of a 5-year-old boy who was taken off of a school bus 6 days ago when the school bus driver was killed. The details are not yet available from law enforcement authorities in Alabama, but it is known that the boy is safe. This is one of those horrifying tales that had to be, in this case, kept rather closed in terms of comment from the authorities for the very simple fact that the kidnapper had set up a bunker in which it could be assumed he was listening in on virtually everything said in the media. For that reason, this was a surprise operation, and yet it ended with a very happy result, a healthy rescued 5-year-old boy. More will be known about this, but once again, Genesis 3 is very much in our horizon. In a horrible world marked by sin, people do awful and unbelievably, nearly unspeakably, sinful things. In this case, a man who had very deep resentments and may well have been mentally ill took out his frustrations on a bus driver and threatened to kill all the school children on that bus. We can only be thankful that at the end of the day, the children are all safe, even as the city mourns a dead school bus driver who courageously appeared to have done his very best to protect his young charges, and in this case with the death of a kidnapper who appeared to be willing to die rather than to release the boy. A mystery of a very different situation has been now resolved in Great Britain, where skeletal remains found under a parking lot in the English Midland city of Leicester have been positively identified as those of King Richard III. This is a very interesting development, interesting for many reasons. First of all, in terms of archaeology, it is rather stunning that now more than 500 years after the fact, archaeologists were able to locate these skeletal remains and then to prove by DNA analysis that they are indeed those of the fallen British king, the last British king to fall in battle. And now Richard III is also one of the most morally and in terms of character conflicted figures in British history. He is often charged as being the murderer of his 2 young nephews, the princes in the Tower, and he was held up by Shakespeare and by a legion of other writers as a symbol of despotism. But in any event, the now identified skeletal remains of King Richard III of Great Britain are going to be buried in Leicester Cathedral, according to an agreement made with the Archaeological Society when this project was begun, and the last Plantagenet King of England will finally be at rest within a cathedral. Not the cathedral, by the way, that he had requested as his burial place. That was York Minster. It turns out it's going to be Leicester, where, for about the last 500 years, he's been hidden underground, and for at least the last couple of decades has been hidden under a parking lot in this English Midlands city. You never know what's under that asphalt. Also in news from England, Justin Welby has been confirmed as the new Archbishop of Canterbury. It took place a little bit after noon on yesterday when the 57-year-old former oil executive was confirmed as the 105th Archbishop of Canterbury. He now follows Rowan Williams as the organizational head of the Church of England and also of the Anglican Communion. Now, the head of the church in terms of the supreme governorship, that's held by the crowned monarch, in this case, Queen Elizabeth II. What we need to note now about the assumption of Justin Welby to the See of Canterbury is that what we're looking at here is the kind of evangelical who can be elected the Archbishop of Canterbury. Justin Welby has already stated that he is in favor of the service of women, not only as priests, but of bishops of the church. And on the issue of same-sex marriage, he said that he has been against it. He is now against it, but he is willing to reconsider his position. That tells you just about everything you need to know about the equivocation that is required of someone who will serve as the Archbishop of Canterbury. In a time of tremendous controversy where Britain now has a state church, but with only a tiny percentage of the citizens of the state involved in any weekly way in terms of the worship and life of the church. Lots to watch here, but there's a new Archbishop of Canterbury, and the Church of England and the Anglican Communion will be watching his leadership carefully. In the United States, a story that had some headlines months ago is back in the headlines, but perhaps in a more minimal way. As Richard Perez Pena reports for the New York Times, students have now been disciplined in a cheating scandal at America's most famous university. As he writes, Harvard has forced dozens of students to leave in its largest cheating scandal in memory. The university made this clear in summing up the affair last Friday, but it would not address assertions that the blame rested partly with the professor and his teaching assistants, end quote. Every once in a while, the veil is parted and the public gets to look within the world and the culture of elite higher education, and it doesn't get any more elite than Harvard University. The undergraduates at Harvard College are the very most select of all the select, and these are, of course, the most coveted seats at an entering class in all of American higher education at the baccalaureate level. Now, Harvard has asked dozens of its students to withdraw, ask here being a euphemism. The withdrawal, by the way, does not mean that they are formally expelled from the university forever. After a period from 2 to 4 years, they may reapply. Other students also receive sanction in what is now the largest cheating scandal in the history of Harvard University. As Perez Pena writes, the episode has given a black eye to one of the world's great educational institutions, where in an average year, 17 students are forced out for academic dishonesty. Now, it's not 17, it's multiple dozens. Howard Gardner, a well-known professor in the Harvard Graduate School of Education, said that eventually the university should, quote, give a much more complete account of exactly what happened and why it happened. Well, at least part of why it happened is because human beings will cheat if they're given the opportunity. It turns out that even the best and the brightest will cheat if given the opportunity. We often think in terms of our mental moral calculation that sin is reserved for those people who are most desperate. But as it turns out, the ones who might be most academically desperate may indeed be those who are at the very top, clamoring to stay on top, who find themselves in a situation such as having been admitted to Harvard University and now actually having to do the work. It turns out that there is no social location that is free from sin, from the temptation to sin, from the temptation to lie, to steal, and to cheat. It turns out that sometimes the wealthy steal, as in the story last week of a wealthy heiress who had to give away most of her inherited fortune because, as it turns out, she had tried to hide it from tax authorities and eventually was found out. She didn't have to steal, she just tried it, and then lost everything. Sometimes those who cheat, speaking of academic fraud, do so not at the lower rungs of the educational ladder, but at the very highest rungs. Once again, a lesson about human depravity and the persistent temptation to sin. Along similar lines, the New York Times also reported on another cheating scandal that this time involved teachers. As Makoto Rich reported for the New York Times, in the end it was a pink baseball cap that revealed an audacious test cheating scheme in three southern states that spanned at least 15 years. This was a test for teacher proficiency. By the way, just about everybody passes this test. According to state examiners, 97 out of 100 people who take the test pass it. You would think that that would mean most people would think they would be able to pass it on their own. But as it turns out, this scandal that affects teachers in three different states was only caught when a woman showed up wearing the same pink baseball cap to take the test as two different people. It turned out there was an organized crime wave made up of those who were substitute test takers for teachers showing up using false identification in order to pass the test for a fee. In other words, cheating is not only isolated to students at the bottom rungs, you might say, of the academic ladder, but all the way at the top. And then furthermore, it's not even limited to those who are students, but extends also to teachers. Recent teacher scandals in Atlanta and in Florida have involved teachers who, under job pressure, turn out to have fed the answers of standardized tests to their young charges in order that they would increase their scores on standard tests. And once again, what we're looking at here is a scandal that Christians know can't be traced back to any state, can't be traced back to any profession, but has to be traced back all the way to Genesis 3. We continue to watch what the Boy Scouts of America National Board will do, even as last week, as we've often discussed, they announced they plan to change the policy now to allow a local option for every scout unit to decide whether it will or will not allow the participation of openly homosexual scouts and leaders. Yesterday, I mentioned the fact that Texas Governor Rick Perry spoke to the situation, saying that the Boy Scouts should not change their policy and should stick with the policy that has served them well for so many decades. But on Sunday, President Barack Obama had spoken to this in an interview given before the Super Bowl on CBS, in which he said, and I quote, "My attitude is that gays and lesbians should have access and opportunity the same way everybody else does in every institution and walk of life. The Scouts are a great institution that are promoting young people and exposing them to opportunities and leadership that will serve people for the rest of their lives. And I think nobody should be barred from that." End quote. What is perhaps most stunning about the president's statement is how categorical and comprehensive he obviously intended to make it. Again, quoting the first line of his response, he said that gays and lesbians should have access and opportunity the same way everybody else does in every institution and walk of life. Well, every institution would include not only the Boy Scouts of America, but churches and other faith-based organizations as well. The president, who has described his own change of mind on the issue of same-sex marriage in terms of evolution, saying that he was evolving on the issue, has evolved as a candidate and now as a two-term president to the point that he is calling for every institution in the land, as he says, every institution and walk of life, to be fully inclusive of those who are involved in any form of the homosexual lifestyle, as you know, the expanding alphabet that includes bisexual and transsexual, transgendered, and many other designations. What we're looking at in this story is the president pushing his point on the Boy Scouts of America. And the president has a very powerful bully pulpit. This president has shown that he intends to use it on the issue of gay rights, as he did during the campaign for same-sex marriage, as he did during his inaugural address, in terms of the inclusion of Stonewall in what he called something of an arc of progress in terms of the expansion of liberty, and now, just before the Super Bowl, to put pressure on the Boy Scouts of America to include homosexuals at every level in that organization as well. We are reminded that just several months ago, the Boy Scouts of America themselves said that the vast majority of the parents of youth involved in the program expected them to maintain the previous policy. We'll see to whom the Boy Scouts have decided to answer. To public pressure, now, along with the President of the United States, or the pressure from parents, who, after all, will make the decisions about who does and does not participate in the Boy Scouts of America. Those who want to develop a comprehensive and faithful Christian worldview have to think about how to apply biblical truth, and that includes the knowledge of human sinfulness, to such things as the role and function of government. For the very reason that we would fear an overreaching and autocratic government, for the very reason that we understand that sin explains why government will try to do more and more in terms of taking over discretion from its citizens, we also have to recognize that sin explains why government is necessary in the first place, as Paul makes very clear in Romans chapter 13, or as a recent accident in China made clear from a very different direction. As the Associated Press has reported, a truck that exploded and caused an elevated stretch of highway to collapse in central China, killing at least 10 people, was loaded with holiday fireworks that were illegally produced and illegally transported, that from Chinese authorities on Saturday. We do need to be aware that the state can indeed threaten to become what Thomas Hobbes called Leviathan, just eating everything in its wake, putting out laws and regulations and statutes to bring everything under its reach. On the other hand, looking at this accident in China reminds us that human sinfulness also indicates the need for some level of government and the need for some level of regulation. Those who look at an accident like this in China should be thankful that we do have a certain level of regulations and statutes and laws in the United States, such that this kind of thing should not happen, or if it did happen, would be caught by regulators, and so that we could prevent the kind of accident that took place with the explosion of illegal fireworks leading to the destruction of an elevated roadway and the deaths of many people. We don't need too much regulation. That stifles human freedom. But we do need some level of regulation. Otherwise, we couldn't trust what we would buy in the store to eat or take as a pill prescribed by our physician. Knowing the balance between what's too little and too much requires the wisdom of Solomon, who, after all, was himself a legislator and a lawgiver. As it turns out, so long as human beings are in control, we'll have to struggle with this kind of issue in China, or for that matter, in the United States as well. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmoeller.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Moeller. For information on the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information on Boyce College, just go to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.